Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 138. We got a great guest for you this week. He's a return guest. I think he has been on more than any other guest at this point. I made the joke late in the podcast that he is basically a co-host, as many shows as he's been on, but our conversations are always good, and we can always get into new stuff. He does a ton of public land stuff, so that's what we're talking about this week, patterning public land bucks and all the things that go into that. We covered, food, water cover, of course, how much pressure impacts that. We talked about sign and which kind of sign to pay attention to and what not to, and what he looks for with all that. We just got into a lot of different things that go into trying to put a pattern together for a shooter buck on public land. And whether that be, whether you're looking for a mature buck or you're any buck, that you're going to be able to use some of this stuff or all of this stuff to kind of figure some things out, hopefully, and help you public land hunters out, even if you're not normally hunting public ground. If you're like me and you just go every now and then for a different place to go, maybe some new scenery, you can put this stuff into practice and it's going to help. But the guest is Austin Stone. He's been on episode 73, 80, 85, 98, 114, and now this one. So you guys can go back and listen to those, listen to all the other topics that we've covered. He's been in studio at least once on those. I believe 73, the first one he's on, we got into his background a little more and his company Tactical Approach Outdoors. So if you want more background on him, go to 73. But you can listen to any of those podcasts and pick up a ton of stuff. I mean, he does a lot of the same things that we do. He's got a management business going on now. He does some property consulting. He does whitetail workshops that we did one with him back in the summer of this year. And we went over really well. He does those all over the Midwest. So he's got a ton of knowledge, and he's nice enough to come on and share it with us whenever I ask him. So I thought it would be a good time to get into some public land stuff, since most of what we do is private land here. We don't have anybody really that hunts. Nobody hunts exclusively public land, and I think I'm the only one of the group that really hunts it at all. So without further ado, let's get into episode number 138 with Austin Stone. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast.
But it's interesting. Public land's freaking weird, dude. It is weird.
That's a good place to start right there. That'll be the opening, and we'll just roll from here. So
that's perfect.
We talked about this. What we want to get into is public land stuff, because we always talk a lot of private ground stuff, because that's what we mostly hunt, or permission ground, which private, some permission ground might as well be public, but you get the idea.
Yep. We
have guys like you or Steve come on. I want to talk about public stuff as much as we can, because you two are light years ahead of where I'm at when it comes to public ground stuff. So, and I think it's good to add some of that for the audience. So that's what I want to talk about today. And more specifically, perfect, we had talked about patterning bucks on public ground.
Yes.
And I have some thoughts on where this might go, but I don't know for sure. So I'm going to let you open it up here. What is maybe like the first step or the ground level when you start, whether that be on a new public piece or one you've been on before, where do you start when it comes to patterning deer on public ground?
The biggest thing when it comes to patterning deer is you got to get eyes on. When I'm looking at a public piece, I'm typically not necessarily starting to look for a pattern other than a primary area that these deer tend to use more than the next, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of that's my post-season scouting comes in. And really what that does, my post-season scouting streamlines my in-season scouting more than anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if I can find those bedding areas, figure out how they're working through those bedding areas, possible feed trees, where scrapes tend to pick up, primary community scrapes, transition routes, mm-hmm. as well as where pressure might be coming from.
Right.
So, and you want to kind of take that with a grain of salt, because it's, I found areas that are really hard to get to, and there's a ton of guys there. And we've hunted in places that are really easy to get to and kill big bucks. Mm-hmm. So it really kind of depends on what people are finding per se, when it comes to, you know, where these deer tend to congregate, but they're always going to tell you where they feel comfortable.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's where the sign is going to be. Usually when I'm finding the really big rubs, I had a comment come through a few weeks ago asking if hunting big rubs was something I do, you know, sitting over big rubs. Mm-hmm. And sitting over big rubs is never something that I've found a lot of value in, right?
Right.
But every single one of my best stand locations that have killed mature bucks have a big primary rub nearby. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think these big deer are really learning to not lay down a ton of sign on public land, and they just know the pressure. They just sense the pressure. So when I find these big primary rubs, they're usually inside bedding cover and they're really close to beds. Mm-hmm. Every time I find one of those really big signpost rubs, it's right next to a bed. Yep. And there's usually a really big community scrape nearby as well. Mm-hmm. So if I can find those signpost rubs in that good bedding cover, there's always going to be producing trees around it, because that's why they're there. They have to feed during the day. That's just the way they are. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be producing feed trees around, and I'm going to find that primary scrape that's right there alongside the bedding cover. Mm-hmm. So the hard part about patterning deer on public land is a lot of public land doesn't allow you to use trail cameras.
Right.
You know what I mean? So getting into the thick cover and ridges and wooded areas, you know, you can't see a long ways where you get out to a little bit more, you know, western Kansas, and you can glass a lot, mm-hmm. right? You can glass long distances. So getting eyes on is the biggest challenge I have found when it comes to putting patterns together. Mm-hmm. But I have had some luck with, when we were able to use cameras, actually putting patterns together for these big deer, and they're always centered around those big scrapes.
Yeah, I want to come back to that a little bit when we get back rolling onto yep. that, but I want to back up just a hair, because you talked about feed trees a couple times there, and it sounds yep. pretty self-explanatory, but I know that there is a difference between a tree that's dropping acorns or some kind of mast tree, hard or soft, and yep. a feed tree. So can you just kind of explain a little bit, so if somebody doesn't know exactly what you're talking about when it comes to a feed tree, what it is and what kind of sign around it that you're looking for to kind of tell you that's what it is?
It's a preferred food source, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the winter, here's a good tip that I found some luck with finding some deer on, are locust trees. You know, that they'll drop those pods mm-hmm. on the ground, and then you'll find a bunch of tracks and a bunch of poop around that tree. Mm-hmm. And deer will just be eating on those pods, which is very interesting. That tends to be a really cool late season food source I've kind of been turned on to here in the last couple of years. Oaks, when it comes to producing, each oak produces differently. You know, some oaks will produce pretty regularly every year, and mm-hmm. then there's other oaks that'll produce every other year mm-hmm. or every few years.
Right.
You know, that can be dependent on a lot of different variables. But this location I'm at in Kansas right now has a lot of bur oaks, mm-hmm. right? And bur oaks tend to produce every other year or every few years, right? Last year they didn't produce. Year before they produced significantly. And so far, what I found this year is I haven't found any acorns again. So there can be different producing feed trees in on a ridge, I have found. And then so deer will shift their movement patterns just a hair, staying in that ridge system that you have found, you know what I mean? But maybe this year using this tree more often, and then next year they're using this other tree a little bit more often. You know what I mean? It just kind of keeping an eye on what they're eating the most, and the best way to figure that out is using is poop and tracks, honestly. You know what I mean? Overall activity
It means they're
underneath the
spending time
tree.
there, right?
That's the key. So if you're finding a lot of poop under a tree and you're finding a lot of tracks under a tree, means they're spending a lot of time there. So those are the kinds of trees. And then when you figure out that specific type of tree, you can now take that and find other trees similar to it, and you can start putting together almost a line of movement along a ridge. I've used that a lot, especially with white oaks, right? Because you'll be hunting red oak flats, and then you'll have some really just a few really good mature white oaks that are producing, and you'll walk 200 yards with very sporadic sign, and then all of a sudden, once you get up, what the sign will start to converge, the trails will be more defined, poop will increase, you'll start seeing some rubs and maybe a scrape, and at that point, you start looking around and you usually find a pretty decent white oak. That's what I've found on areas that I've been hunting mostly, right, throughout the years. So similar to that, you're looking for more evident deer sign and not scattered deer sign. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes a
So
lot of sense.
that's usually what I go for. And if you're hunting in an area where maybe you've got a few trees in that same general area, say you come up on a persimmon patch.
Our partners at Flambeau Outdoors have some of the best solutions in the industry for your decoy and storage needs. They're focused on innovation that matters, and they build their products to last. They're probably most known for their whitetail, waterfowl, and turkey decoys, and that's for good reason. They've got a lot of quality options at great price points in each category. The Boss Buck is a personal favorite of mine in their whitetail line, and I've been throwing their Stormfront mallards in front of duck blinds for years now. Don't sleep on their storage solutions either, though. Whether it's fishing tackle, firearms, ammo, or archery equipment, they've got you covered. They just stepped up their archery storage game, too, with the new Formula Bow Case. It might just be the best bow case on the market, and I'm really excited to use it this season and for years to come. Make the most of your time outdoors with Flambeau. Realism that gets results.
I've actually almost seen the opposite, where I've ran into this big patch of persimmons, and the deer sign will then get kind of sporadic, but there's a lot of deer poop in it. So you can tell that the deer are just kind of randomly grazing and browsing. You know what I mean? And then when they leave that patch, the trail defines again. So it's interesting because when I find a specific tree, the sign goes from very sporadic to very concentrated. And then when I find a little grove of trees, it goes from very concentrated to very sporadic, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
But you can tell that they're spending a lot of time there and they're not just moving through.
That makes sense. And that's what you're looking for when it comes to that. And then, like you said, and that kind of leads into it, the patterning part is when you do find those on a ridge line, and like, so you drop a pin and then you go back and look at your map and you kind of see this almost a line of where these trees are at, you can assume that's a direction of travel. And then it comes down to, like, that's patterning the deer in general. But then once you come down to patterning a specific buck, it's that either that buck sign you're talking about, or what we just backed up from was the cameras. You talked about having some luck with those. So on private ground, a lot of times that's what we do when it comes to patterning. Obviously, the eyes on part is a lot easier if you have if you're in areas where there's big ag fields and maybe you could sit a bean field in the evening, right, and find out if that buck's even still there, for one thing. So early season patterning, maybe you can use that. But more so, running trail cameras, and for us, it's not as much like the most recent information. While that does help, or maybe it helps you figure out when a deer is going to be in that spot or on that farm, year-over-year trail camera data is huge for us, because
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If there's a deer that's been showing up for the past 2 or 3 years and it's in the same window, a lot of times it'll be within the same week or 10 to 14 days where that deer is showing up, and then the same thing on the backside when he's leaving, right? Mm-hmm. So that's something that we use for our trail cameras for when it comes to patterning these bucks. So is that similar to what you're doing on the public, or are you just like confirming whether there's target bucks using a specific area that you've identified as a travel corridor or as a feeding area, or is it a combination, or like how are you using those when you can? Obviously,
it's a combination. So a lot of times when I'm running into public land, I'm not running into a lot, you know, multiple really big shooter bucks, right? I'll find one using this primary location, and he's got a few 2 to 3 year olds, right? 2 and 3 year olds with him. Mm-hmm. And then I'll have another buck in a completely other location. And then if I'm really lucky, the only time I really ran into this is during the rut though. So or either really early season or in the rut, where I find really multiple really big deer running together. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But typically the numbers, the density of those big mature bucks, I found to be a little bit lower on public. That's why you've got to move around a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And also why those big mature bucks feel comfortable not moving as much.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you get to states like Kansas and Iowa, where you have a higher density of mature bucks, it forces those bucks to get out and move more often. Where maybe you've got places that I've seen this in Missouri, because I've hunted Missouri my whole life, where you have one really nice mature buck, but he kind of holds up just in that thicket. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he doesn't really go anywhere else because of pressure has kept him there. But he also hasn't had a reason to leave because there's plenty of does with him.
Yeah.
So, you know, so for daylight movement, that tends to be what he's done. And then they'll just bounce to the next thicket once they're out of does. But, I'll do a little bit of both. So I like using previous year's data. That's why I like postseason scouting so much. Mm-hmm. It's not a foolproof plan, but for the most part, there's a reason why those deer are there and doing what they're doing, and they're going to do it again. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So if you can kind of find the general area that they prefer to be in, that's what I like to do. And I can find the types of vegetation they're preferring, the types of trees they're preferring on that property. And then I can focus on that. I can focus on that same elevation that the deer are tending to use, mm-hmm. you know, to move on the most. And then once you find the why to that, then it really makes it easy, and you can nail down every part of the property. And if I go to a specific part of the property that has all of those pieces that match, but there's no sign, every single time there's hunting pressure. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to, you can skip by that place.
Yeah. Makes sense.
So finding areas where there's general big deer, target deer using the area is what I'm doing. And then if I'm able to actually nail down and get eyes on a specific deer, then I can get a little bit more specific about how that deer is using that area. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like I said, a lot of times, areas that I find that are really tore up, that have really good buck sign in them, mature buck sign in them, I'm only finding one really good buck in it. So typically if I shoot a one really good buck, it's a guess, but it's a decent guess that was probably the deer mm-hmm. using that area. Mm-hmm. So, without actual visual confirmation.
Right. That could be a good and a bad thing too, I guess, right? Because you're not...
It is.
You're not in there hunting maybe a deer that's not something you necessarily want to shoot. Or like, let's say there's three or four young bucks in there, but no mature bucks. But you see all this buck sign, and so you're spending a bunch of time in there, and all you're seeing is a bunch of bucks that you don't want to shoot, if that's not your goal, right? So I guess it could be good and bad. The bad thing is, if that one doesn't come by, you're not killing anything, right? There's no other bucks to just happen to walk by or something.
Exactly. And then it really depends on each buck is different too. Mm-hmm. You know, so last year that buck I was hunting in Kentucky, he ran all year with a stud 8-point. Mm-hmm. So I would have been more than happy with taking either one of those deer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, the few bucks I've been hunting in Kansas, they've been loners. So it's just been interesting to figure out the little bit of a difference in the deer. I will say though, I have noticed the property I found in Kentucky has a very high mature buck density. Uh-huh. So maybe that could be a reason why I found more deer running together like that there compared to other locations.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's fun getting to different states and different properties and seeing how deer use the properties so differently and yet so similarly.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yep. So when you're finding this stuff, you're obviously, I would assume your process kind of, the first thing you're looking for is deer sign in general. But then how do you go about deciding if that's a spot either worth putting up a camera or worth spending time? Is it any kind of buck sign, or are you looking for a specific buck sign, or is it just there's a bunch of deer sign around here, there's not a lot of buck sign, but I know there's deer here, so there's bound to be a buck somewhere. Like, what's that? How do you go about that?
Typically, I'm looking for the significant buck sign for the area.
Okay.
You know, it could be a car hood size scrape, and most of the other scrapes are dinner plates. Or it could be going from no scrapes to maybe you've got a line of three different paper plate size scrapes there. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That could be a 180. I've got pictures of Megas doing that exact thing, is going from almost no scrapes and leaving no sign to you got a series of a few tiny scrapes that here in the Midwest we might walk over.
Right.
And instead, but there's actually a mega giant using those scrapes. So I let that property tell me what's significant and what's not. So I'll mark everything. I like marking everything and then just looking on the map and figuring out a rhyme or reason to the movement. Mm-hmm. And then when I find significant sign for that specific area, then I look into that's probably where I probably need to leave a camera or nearby. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Maybe find some converging trails nearby. Or if it's earlier in the season, I know there's good bucks in the area because I've seen tracks. So I'm going to find a good movement route, you know, converging trails or a good, you know, field corner, something along those lines that maybe I find a congregation of more tracks than other locations. Mm-hmm. And I'll go from there. That, you know, I'll start there and then move accordingly, make adjustments. You know, if I get one picture, but he's not really using it often, maybe I can shift that camera because I know he's there, there's confirmation. And then I can shift that camera and maybe figure out there's another location that he's using more often. Mm-hmm. So in 22, when I shot that buck, I had my camera on this one particular scrape where early September was the primary scrape, right? It was the bigger one on the ridge, and this was the only ridge that had scrapes on it. Mm-hmm. So I immediately started running a camera there. And further on into October, that scrape started going dry. He was still using it, and a few other bucks were using it, does are using it, but it wasn't really being used as often. Mm-hmm. And going into, what was it, early November? Yes, early November. I hadn't been there, I think, for a couple of weeks, so I went back, did a little scouting trip, and found that those scrapes had shifted 60 yards. Mm-hmm. So I ended up moving the camera over to the new scrapes and immediately got him on camera. So it just goes to show just what the camera, you know, if the camera's not picking him up, doesn't mean that he's not there.
Right.
So that's been, I've had that happen way too many times. As you know, there's a good deer in the area because the sign shows it, but mm-hmm. he's just not showing up on camera. And then you go hunt and you end up seeing him or shooting him.
Right.
So,
that's a big thing. Even
take it, yeah.
Even on private ground, I struggle with, and I think a lot of people do. Like even on the 10-acre piece that I got, I've got four or five cameras on it right now. Four cell cameras and one traditional camera. So, I've got five cameras on that 10-acre piece, and I know it pretty well, so I know how they use it for the most part. But there are still so many places where any deer, let alone a mature buck, could slip in there and even use my food plots and then get out, and I would never get a picture of him, right? Yep. Like the buck I shot last year, he was 30 yards from the stand just off the edge of the food plot, and I never got a picture of him. And had we not been there, I'd have never known he was even on the property. So that's something we struggle with on private land. I wondered if that was something, and you probably maybe even take less stock in some of that data that you're getting just being on public ground.
I do. I take less stock in it. And really what I did do is I focus more on the woodsmanship side of it. Mm-hmm. And the cameras, I let the camera confirm that I've got something I want to kill in there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I've used it the most throughout the years. When I've been able to use cameras is over actually patterning deer. I've let those cameras confirm that there's deer in there that I want to pursue.
Right.
And then I let my scouting do the work from there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that a lot of folks get kind of hooked up on, is they take too much stock in trail camera images, mm-hmm. and not taking into account that deer is more than likely actually using the property more than you think, and that area more than you think. You're just not getting them on camera.
Yep.
Oh, you're going to love this too.
Okay.
This shows you how close they could be without getting pictures.
If you guys are looking for your own piece of ground to manage and hunt, Rodney Hawkins is a guy you need to talk to. He grew up hunting and fishing in Southern Illinois, and he's now putting that love for the outdoors into selling recreational properties as a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. Midwest Farm and Land isn't your average real estate company. They do residential properties, but they also do a ton of recreational property sales as well. Rodney himself sold over $7 million worth of properties last year alone. They've got agents like him all over Illinois, so they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them, what might be available, or even getting your property listed if you're looking to get rid of one and maybe get into something else, you can contact Rodney directly at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. He's also got his own company called RG Outdoors that currently has products from Radix Hunting, Tacticam Trail Cameras, Camo Dust, and he's adding new stuff all the time. So if you're interested in any of that, go over to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors, email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153.
I had a scrape shift, not even 10 yards, mm-hmm. maybe five, to the other side of this little tree mm-hmm. that I was on. And I thought the camera was able to cover that side of the tree. Mm-hmm. I go in, and camera's cold, scrape's dry. I go in, and there's this massive freaking active scrape 10 to 15 feet from the other scrape. It's just not picking him up on camera.
Right.
And for who knows what the reason was, that they shifted. Maybe they just decided to scrape the other tree. Maybe they caught a weird view of the camera.
Right. Maybe one deer just came on the wrong side of the tree and didn't even know the other one was over there and started a new one.
That too. Yeah, you just never know. So you can't take too much stock into, you know, so if I decided not to go into that location, and that was the location I shot my 170 out of and saw the bigger deer.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I took only stock in, you know, trail camera footage, I would have never known. I would have never went in and hunted the location like that.
Yep. It's definitely an easy trap to fall into.
It is. It's an easy trap to fall into, and you have to be so careful with it mm-hmm. and just trust your instincts, you know? So it's especially on public land, you know, and more and more they're getting rid of trail cameras, so we can't even confirm what deer are there without getting eyes on.
Right.
But just trusting the sign that you're seeing and using that.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At woodsmanship, and developing those patterns of use just off of what the deer are giving you.
Right.
And with that, I always tend to go with a destination location, a draw of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's like the scrapes, the feed trees, anything like that. That's always what I'm focusing more on versus, you know, trying to, well, I hope he walks by this part of the field.
Right.
You know what I mean? Unless you have a reason to know that he prefers using that part of the field over the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually eyes on.
Yep.
But
so do you find value in patterning other hunters? Like figuring out the pressure? And how are you doing that? Is it based on, like, maybe, like you said earlier, there's a place where you think there should be deer, but there's not, like there's no sign? Is it maybe even using trail cameras, getting pictures of other hunters in an area you thought maybe they weren't hunting? Is it eyes on, like combination of everything? How do you do that, and how much value do you put on what the other, like patterning the other hunters?
I mean, really, honestly, the deer tell you.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you where they feel safe and comfortable. So if I come to a location like we were talking about earlier that should have a ton of deer sign and should be shredded, like this, a mega oak tree surrounded by cedars, there should be no reason there's not a deer in here, right?
Right.
There's always hunting pressure there. I find something,
mm-hmm.
right? And maybe I don't find something on that trip, but I find on a different trip, I found pressure. You know,
mm-hmm.
so usually the deer will tell me, and if I'm hunting a location and everything goes dry randomly, that I've had happen before, and anybody who hunts public land has had happen before,
mm-hmm.
is you're on deer, and then you go back for the cold front, and the deer are gone, vanished without a trace, signs dried up, just gone,
mm-hmm.
and you sit there long enough, and you figure out that there's been quite a few people move in and scout and hunt since you've been gone.
Right.
So that's where it's important to have multiple different options. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And not putting all your chips into one bag. So, you know, just in case something happens that you don't know, you know, cause you know, if a giant group of guys come in randomly that you didn't know was coming in,
mm-hmm.
You've been on deer all through, you know, September, October, then come in for a rut hunt, big group of guys blow out the area. It mm-hmm. happens pretty easily, but don't count out that the deer will return. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
So that's something I found too. If you don't fill a tag on your adjustment, don't count that location out completely. Cause if that property hadn't been pressured in a significant manner for a long time, the deer will come back and check it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And if that's the case and the hunting pressure is gone, your sign will pick up again. Your scrapes will freshen up and you'll see rubs pick up.
So there's definitely there are different types of pressures too, right? Like you have, maybe where guys come in and they hunt every day for a week and okay, they hunt the same stand, they walk in the same way no matter what the wind. That's definitely a certain type or certain level of pressure versus maybe the guy that just, he came in on a rainy day and he's slipping through being smart about it, trying to do some scouting. While he still has some impact, it's definitely not the same as the other guy. So that would play into the equation too, right?
Yeah, and the only pressure that concerns me is the pressure that stays.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy that's just walking through, you know, still hunting one day, or he's walking through scouting one day, or he's carrying his stand trying to look for a location, and he's just passing through.
Mm-hmm.
And those folks, that doesn't bother me. And the deer don't bother too much by that either.
Mm-hmm.
It's once it becomes consistent and that pressure stays, that's when they quit using the area.
Right.
And they shift their patterns. So, you know, because I'll have that happen quite a bit is that I'll be hunting a spot and in my mind, like, why in the world are you not hunting this? You know, when you get a guy walk by, like, to me, it makes no sense why you wouldn't be hunting it,
mm-hmm.
but they don't for whatever reason. You know, it looks funny. You know, it's not a textbook location that you see on TV.
Right.
Right. So there's a lot of reasons why people don't stay, but that's fine with me because I'll figure out how to hunt it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So as long as the pressure doesn't stay, I usually don't have an issue.
So you talked about some of the places you've been like pretty close to access or not far off the road or whatever, and you've found success in those places. What makes those specific places attractive to the deer? Is it a specific type of terrain that they're using more often, or is it just the pressure is all basically going past them? If you guys plant food plots and you don't know who Grandpa Ray Outdoors is, you need to look him up. They specialize in providing the best nutrition for whitetail deer on your property, starting with the soil. They've got a full line of high-quality food plot seed and plant foods with over 14 different food plot blends to choose from. You won't have any trouble finding what you're looking for. They've got fall and spring blends, corn and beans, switchgrass, liquid fertilizer, soil test kits, you name it. When it comes to planting, they've got it. They're not just about selling their products, though. They were started in 2015. John, the owner, has been in the business since 1991. So with that knowledge that he's acquired, he's going to be able to answer any questions you have about what blends would be best for your specific property. That way you can achieve the best results possible. Like us, John and his team don't believe in a cookie-cutter approach to wildlife nutrition. They're going to treat you and your situation individually. We've used tons of their seed on client properties, on our own properties, and the results have always been as good, if not better, than advertised. That's why we partnered with them in the first place. If you want to, go to GrandpaRayOutdoors.com, use the discount code RHOPODCAST, that's all lowercase, no space, and you get 5% off your entire order there. You guys need to go check them out if you care about getting the most bang for your buck when it comes to your food plots.
For whatever reason, the pressure is going past them.
Okay.
And they have a great little thicket and oaks in there that they can sit there and eat, and there's just no, you know, they have everything they need,
mm-hmm.
right? A location that we would look for deeper in the ridgeline,
mm-hmm.
it has all of the ingredients, you know, but it's close to the parking lot, which usually means hunting pressure.
Right.
Right. So, and for whatever reason, there's just no hunting pressure at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's just walking past it.
Yeah.
So usually on public land, it's very sporadic pockets that I'm finding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might hunt a 7,000 acre property and really only have a handful of locations that I actually want to hunt.
Right.
So that's the reason, is because of the pressure. So there's, for whatever reason, they're not staying on this particular ridgetop, right? This little terrain feature, this pocket of trees, for whatever reason, they're not getting pressured there. So that's where they are.
Yeah.
You know, so you just kind of got to listen to what the deer are telling you. And they'll tell you through through the deer sign.
Yeah.
Their tracks and their poop and scrapes and rubs. They'll tell you where they feel comfortable.
Yeah. What would you say that when it comes to trying to pattern these bucks or put some kind of pattern on them, is does pressure pretty much trump everything else? Like, even if you, let's say you see some sign, but maybe it's not incredibly fresh, but you know people have been going in there, like you've seen them going in there or something, or your cameras did have a bunch of bucks on them, but you haven't had them in a few days, and now you've got hunters on your camera. Like, does pressure trump everything else when it comes to patterning these bucks, or do you find that if there's a place that a buck wants to be, he will put up with a little bit of it?
You know, I guess it depends on how that buck grew up. I guess that's a good way of describing that. Cause you know, you hear guys, talk about on private land, how these big deer will put up with a little pressure. And yeah, I mean, on public land that they'll put up with a little bit. I can see big bucks putting up with a little bit because there's a reason they feel safe in that specific location.
Right.
You know, they have found that location throughout the years of searching, and that's where they feel safe. That's why they're there. But I do feel like safety is their number one concern over anything else. So, I feel like pressure is the number one factor, and that's the number one thing that I take any stock in, really, that, you know, with my own personal hunting and on client properties, is making sure your pressure is not the reason you're messing up your hunt. You know, because, you know, you can't control weather. You can only control food to an extent. On public land, you can't control food at all.
Right.
You can only control water to an extent. And again, on public land, you can't control water at all. So pressure is the one variable that can throw a pattern off completely, crush all the intel that you have been gathering in really quick.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And it may be the kind of thing, you know, hopefully that deer survives. And if he survives, you can pick that pattern back up either later in the season or next year.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
But, you know, on private ground, I've seen this happen a lot, is the overuse of a property. And, you know, in a period of 5 years where you start hunting a property, you got a ton of great deer using it, bedding on property. And then all of a sudden you don't have the numbers of those big bucks using the property, but all the puzzle pieces are there. All the ingredients are there. There's no reason they shouldn't be there. And every single time it's pressure related.
Yep.
How much are you driving the property, walking the property, just using the property? And that's one of those interesting parts about public land, is that everybody can use it. You know, there's no control over who accesses, how often, and where.
So
that's why the typically when I'm finding these big deer in good hunting locations, it's very small pockets of movement. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And those are the locations that also have a draw to them.
Right.
Like we talked about, you know, a destination location.
Yep. Which you talked about that, and then you hit on water just a little bit there. You were talking about how you had no control on it on public ground, a little bit on private. How much stock do you put into water sources? Because I know for me personally, on private ground, one of my stands, which you've seen, is right by a pond, almost an acre pond. And it's just not because I'm like hunting that as a specific place for them to come to. It just sets up that I end up being by the pond, right? And I can count on one hand probably over the last easily 10, 11 years, maybe 12 years, how many bucks I've seen, let alone really how many deer I've seen drink out of that pond while I've been on stand, right? I think that they probably get a lot of their water source from the browse that they're eating. So yep. maybe if it's a year where there's not a lot of browse around, you could see them on those water holes more often. But it doesn't seem as consistent. Now, I have seen small water holes where maybe you put them by a stand that if it's right by a trail, those deer will stop and hit it pretty consistently, but it's not like they're coming to the water. It's more of just a reason to get them to stop in bow range naturally, right? So do you, on public ground, do you put a lot of stock in water sources, or you find the similar things?
I definitely do put stock in it, mm-hmm. and there needs to be a good water source nearby.
Okay, yeah.
Usually when I'm finding bedding areas, because I'm hunting adjacent to bedding areas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So every time I find a good big buck bedding area, there's water somewhat nearby,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, he's probably drinking at night, honestly.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of times, but especially once you start talking about kind of where we're at even now with a drought, but mm-hmm. back in 2022, that was even a bit of a drought.
Yep.
And I killed this buck not over a spring, but within 100 yards of a spring.
Okay. Yeah.
In the hills, in the ridges. Mm-hmm. And it was the only water source up in the ridges.
Mm-hmm.
So the only other water source nearby that he had to completely leave the ridge and get down into the creek, which fed into the marsh.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's the limited resource.
Yeah.
You know, are you hunting an area that has a lot of water? Then water won't be a limited resource.
Right.
But if you're in an area that has very sporadic water, or the water is not safe because of pressure, mm-hmm. right? Because the water is not safe because of pressure, which was the reason for this. That's why this made such a big deal,
mm-hmm.
is the water was closer to access to the road, to the parking lots, and it got used more often. Where mm-hmm. this spring was just enough water up in the hills, really close to the cedar thickets that they were bedding in, and that they were using it on a very regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, I know of a location similar to that I'm going to go check out, probably in the next few days, and just see what that looks like. It's an old well. That was actually the cool part. Yeah. This little location, it's an old homestead.
Yeah.
That's just the foundation. And it's an old well, but it was overflowing water all over the place, and scrapes and rubs and beds all over the place, you know, great cedar thicket right up against it, and a really cool location. So I found that spring of 23. So I'm really curious to know what it looks like mm-hmm. now, kind of going into the drought here,
mm-hmm.
and if that's a really active spring. Because if that's a really active spring like it was then that could be a really interesting hunt up in the hills, the way, you know, really close to the cedar thicket and, you know, adjacent to their bedding.
Yeah. Yeah, you hit on a good point there. We talk about it all the time, the three things that they need, and water is one of them. But it may not necessarily be that they're, you know, drinking that during daylight hours or when you're going to be hunting over it, right? They're probably going to that main water source at night just because it is safer. And I would say probably especially on public ground, if they have to, number one, move any distance to get to it, or number two, just the fact that somebody might be hunting over it occasionally and they've had a bad experience, they're probably going to that thing at night. And that's where I think they probably do get a lot of their water intake during the day through their browse, but they absolutely have to have it. So it is something, I guess, a good point that you made there. If you see all this stuff that looks like it ought to be a really good spot, but you can't find any deer there, maybe there's not any water around, so they have to be somewhere else. Because they're not going to want to have to go 2 miles to get to water, because by that time, is it even worth it? And
100%.
And then they're taking that time to go get water instead of feeding, and then they're pushing it to get back to their bed. Like, they don't want to do that during the daytime. So that's definitely a good point when it comes to water, I think. Hey, everybody, I appreciate you tuning in for another episode. If you don't already, go over to Instagram and Facebook and give us a follow at Ridge Hunter Outdoors. We also have a private Facebook group called Ridge Hunter Nation where you guys can have some input on the show. You can ask us questions. You can ask upcoming guests questions. You can tell us who you want us to have on and what you want us to talk about. And on top of all that, just use it as a regular hunting group. Share your stories, your success, pictures, your failures, whatever it is. That's all at Ridge Hunter Nation on Facebook. Our website is ridgehunteroutdoors.com. That's where you're going to find more info on the consulting and management services that we provide. We also have the podcast posted on the website with some other content as well. And we have our merchandise and our food plot seed. And if you find any of that stuff that you want, make sure you use the discount code RHOPOD. That's all caps, no space. And you get 10% off your entire order there. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere else that lets you do so, make sure you rate and review. That helps us and give us a follow there too. YouTube, our channel is Ridge Hunter Outdoors. You can subscribe to that, hit the notification bell so you know when everything comes out. The podcast will be posted there, as is our Fall Pursuit show, which we'll have more of coming up next season. You guys can go back and rewatch everything that we did this year. We had 10 episodes on that. And of course, we'll have all our off-season content on YouTube as well. So thanks to everybody who already does follow and subscribe. If you don't, make sure you go do that. Now let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, that like we said, I mean, I've found all my main bedding locations, I found water nearby. Mm-hmm. So just some kind of hidden little water source.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not very often have I hunted really large primary water sources. In Iowa, I did. Mm-hmm. And I think that one was a little bit of a, that was just a really cool property. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just an amazing property. But a lot of these areas I haven't found major primary water sources really close. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if they are, they definitely haven't been, they'll use them at night. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but if I can find something, find the bedding cover, you know, heading up into the ridges, or if you're hunting, if you're not hunting ridges, you know, more ag ground, get back into the thicker cover. And if you can find a hidden little water source back there adjacent to bedding cover, mm-hmm. you might find yourself a cool little spot.
Yeah. Yep.
Because I was filming deer drinking on this water hole, you know, all day, mm-hmm. during daylight. I got pictures of the buck I ended up shooting, him using the water hole actively, you know, through mm-hmm. October, mm-hmm. and you know, during daylight. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely something not to count out.
Right.
It's just, what's the limited resource? And you can take that back. I'm going to circle back to feed trees. What's the limited resource? Mm-hmm. You know, you could have a lot of different feed trees, but, you know, which one maybe not, maybe doesn't produce as often, or is it something that tastes better?
Right.
And it's a little bit, it's more limited in location, mm-hmm. and that's what they're preferring to eat on.
Yeah. And ultimately, you know, that, like what you're talking to, comes down to pressure whether they're going to be using it in daylight or not, right? Like that, yep. that water source you're talking about, if they feel safe going to it in the daylight and it's close to bedding or whatever, that's where you find those spots you're talking about. Or if that feed yep. tree is, if there's not a ton of pressure around it, if it's close enough to bedding, that's where you're going to want to be in the daylight. Yep. And that's similar to private land. The difference is you can control the pressure. So
exactly.
if there is a spot like that, you might see it more often. Especially times of the year, like during the rut, a lot of times people, I think, overlook water as a potential yep. for finding a deer, even midday, just because he's so run down and he's needing that extra water intake that he's not yep. getting normally. So, you know, or of course, when it's really hot early season, if it's been really dry, things like that, of course, too. But it, I mean, just circles back again to pressure. If they feel safe using it, then they'll mm-hmm. probably use it in the daylight. Yep. If they don't,
absolutely.
Or if they have to go too far, they're probably not going to.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a really good point that you brought up. You know, they could be using that particular resource. You know, the buck you're after could be using that resource, but if he doesn't feel safe using it during daylight, then it's not worth hunting. Mm-hmm. You know, so that you could start with, you know, nighttime pictures. That's a great way to start. Mm-hmm. You can locate them on easier to access areas and locate a deer, and then start figuring out what the bedding cover and ridge system looks like behind it. And then you can start moving back from there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And find that destination location that he feels more safe in to use during daylight.
Yep. Yep. That's something the last thing I want to hit on here is we were talking about cameras earlier, and you talked about moving some around and stuff, and in the places where you can use them, and you could still do this to some extent without, it would just be a little more difficult, and obviously you'd have to be more active with it and actually get boots on the ground and be a little more intrusive. But if you can set up a camera, like you just said, and locate them at night, if you can figure out, you know, a lot of times at night, which way their butt's facing is probably where they're coming from, right? So you can kind of backtrack to find maybe where they were bedding. If you're getting them like early morning, whichever way his nose is facing is probably where he's going to bed at. So if you can get that picture of him at night, then you can go find the trail he was coming from maybe. You can back your camera up, and this is something especially, like I could only do this so far on 10 acres before I hit the property line. Like I could get them on one side of it, move the camera once, still get them at night, and then I'm out of luck on that. And you could do that on 100 acres too in some places.
Yeah.
But on public ground, I think that's something that maybe you could use to your advantage even more, because you do have so many acres. You could bump that camera back literally until you either get daylight pictures of him, or you just walk up and find his bed, and you're going to be still on the ground. You can hunt, right? So is that something that you've used, or that, I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. And that's something I actually have enjoyed about public land is, you know, even though it can be frustrating at times, is you have a lot of options and you have a very large property a lot of times to hunt, you know? So you know, if you locate him a mile from where you end up killing him, you know, you found him here during nighttime feeding or heading to feeding, and then you can walk your camera back to a specific bedding thicket that you know, because you did your postseason scouting, you kind of know what the property looks like. All you need to know is that there's a mature deer in the area, the general area, and then you can start walking your cameras back to those known bedding areas and figure out which one he's using, or the multiple that he's using.
Yep, no doubt.
Because they're going to use multiple beds. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, they're not going to stay in the same place all the time.
No, you just got to find the one that they tend to use the most. So, no, I like you doing that on where I can. Use cameras on public, which is getting fewer and fewer, is actually locating them in an area that will be easier to locate them, just because it's going to draw more deer. You know what I mean? And then using the scouting that I've done during postseason to locate the bedding areas and the thickets and the feed trees, and then immediately moving the cameras back to them and figuring out which ones he's using. You know, so if you have a big property like that you're hunting, and you did the scouting prior and you know what that property looks like, locate that buck, and then you can immediately jump your cameras back. Right? So instead of, you know, walking them back step by step and you're kind of playing the catch up game, go ahead and just send them back there and figure out where he's at, because you're probably going to get daylight pictures of him quicker.
Right.
Doing that. And then even if you just want to go ahead, I've used this tactic before, is going ahead and just putting cameras on those known scrapes and waiting for them to show up.
Yep. It's a lot less intrusive that way.
It is. And you know, it may be, the camera may be dry for a month and a half, and then all of a sudden that scrape goes fresh. And you're in to hunt it on the next cold front.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's, but you know, if you didn't know that scrape was there due to your scouting, you know,
right.
Then you just wouldn't have known it was there. And then, you know, if the scrape is that dry for that long, I might look into, unless It was just a mega crazy scrape that I know should be fresh. And, you know, I might go in there and just check and see if the scrape hasn't adjusted. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not getting pictures of it. But that's a great technique, is just to go back, and that I've used, is just to go ahead and set the cam in a location that I know they have used in the past. Mm-hmm. And just wait for it to go to get hot.
Yep. Yep.
So,
well, man, we've been over, I think, a lot of the most of the cornerstones of patterning public ground bucks. So food, water, cover, of course, and then
yep.
the sign, the right type of sign, and then the biggest one being pressure, as yeah. always. And that's anywhere. It's yeah. just something you can't control on public ground. So I think we've done a good job of covering that. Is there anything else that you think we missed that you want to go over before we get out of here?
I can't really think of anything. I think it kind of sums it all up to just be mobile, mm-hmm. you know, it just keep working and keep listening to what the deer are telling you. Cause they're going to tell you where they feel safe.
Yep. Yep.
You know, so that's just kind of the route that I like to take. And I make sure I have a lot of options. Mm-hmm. So because that pressure is, you can't control that pressure. You never know when something's going to happen. So I just make sure I have a lot of other plans in place, and I can either switch locations or completely switch properties, which I usually do.
Yep. There's so many outside variables you can't control, but you can at least control how you react to it. And if you have a plan for when it comes, for sure.
Yes. Control what you can control.
Yep.
So.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Well, man, I'll look it up so I can put it in the intro, but I don't know how many times you've been on the podcast now. You're practically a co-host of it. but it's
I love it.
It's always fun talking to you, and I appreciate you taking the time out of the evening again to teach us a little public land stuff, so hopefully people got something out of that. But why don't you go ahead and tell them where they can find you so that if they did like it, if they want more info like this, where they can keep up with you guys and keep it up with your season, because I know you guys got started back in September, but it'll get rolling here for really good in a couple weeks, probably.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate you having me on. I love our conversations every time we have it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, folks, you guys can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube at Tactical Approach Outdoors. My website is tacticalapproachoutdoors.com. So there's a lot of different videos over there, not only of my own adventures and hunting throughout the year, but also different tips and tricks and tactics that I've used and found success with throughout the years. So I am a little behind on videos, which I have to fix.
I hear you right there.
I've got to start getting after it here in October. So
yep.
Be looking forward to putting more videos out with season heating up here.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks again for joining us. Hopefully everybody that's listening enjoyed it. And make sure you go check out Austin's content and his website. He's got a ton of great information and good quality video, just entertainment value as well. So thanks, man, and I'm sure we'll do it again. Why wouldn't we at this point?
But next one will be after we put a deer down.
For sure. Layout, let's do it.
All right.